Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dan McNeil. Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go.
Afternoons on The Score.
You got a number for Bill Murray?
Oh, that's Mitch's black book. Yeah.
Because I have written the names of all of my very special sweet ladies down in this my black book.
Look at that thing.
With a number for Bill Murray.
And some 70s adult film stars.
Yeah, there's a 0% chance that number is still operational.
Is Seika still in there? Seika still alive?
The answer is no. I never spoke to Seika. I guess the closest was I met Marilyn Chambers.
Oh, wow, this book is insane.
Yeah.
This looks like a beautiful mind for a sports producer with just stains all over it.
Kind of like the Bible. You can just open it to any page and you're going to read something that's enlightening.
We're going to flip to a random page and we're going to all vote as a show and an audience and we're going to just try to book that person from that page. You guys in?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Carl Weathers.
You take this home, throw it in a pot, add some broth, a potato. Baby, you got a stew going.
What's the most recent number in here, Mitch?
Called Angie Dickinson.
Hello?
And who's still Dickinson?
Yes. Just checking the number.
Look at me. I'm Angie Dickinson. Out of my way.
Okay, let's call John Goodman live on the air, though. From Mitch's Black Book, circa 1994. Fantastic actor. Anaconda.
The number you have reached is not in service.
The Ameritech customer you were trying to reach.
Goodman. We've been foiled again. Okay.
Should I live it up?
No, we're good now.
Okay,
we're good.
Thanks. Knucklehead, get it off here.
Hey, thanks, Danny.
Hey, post to the next round for the tournament.
Donnie, shut the phone. When do we play?
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkins Show. Afternoons 1 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. I was really hoping we'd get a chance to talk to John Goodman yesterday. Would have been a blast.
Didn't happen.
The black book from Mitch Rosen fell flat.
I didn't hear the show, but I do remember living the bit from your perspective several years ago.
Yeah.
In another incarnation of a radio show on a very similar radio station as this.
I believe it.
I have lived the bit
of calling the black book numbers.
Yes, and Angie Dickinson. I think she once went out with a former bear. I'm not allowed to mention. Right? Did that come up yesterday?
It did not. No.
Oh, okay. All right.
So now you probably have to mention it.
Well,
we have a policy on this show.
Well, it was Matsui. No, it wasn't. I just wanted to name Matsui's name.
Fair enough. Made me
feel good to bring that up.
Harvey Unga, really?
You just keep hanging around,
wasn't
man.
Just showing up at Bourbonnais for nothing.
Harvey Unga every August. Where's Harvey Unga? He's still there at Bourbonnais. He's at TJ Donlin's. He's playing bags against Larry Mayer and Bob Laguerre.
The Bears.
He's Matt Spiegel in for Mac, who will be back tomorrow. Will Perdue will join us to tell some Texas winter stories in 35 minutes. Brent Musburger at 3 o'clock. Bobby Portis at 3:30. But on this Chris Bryant non-report story, hearing things fill some radio time story, Chris Bryant shouldn't sign a contract extension with the Cubs, and no one thinks that he is going to, right? Like, that information isn't new. Chris Bryant is going to play out his contract in all likelihood and hit free agency.
In all likelihood.
Like 95% of Scott Boras clients.
Well, like, yeah, a lot of Scott Boras clients, not all of them. I remember Elvis Andrus used to be the example of a guy who did not do that. Steven Strasburg recently was a Boras client who did sign one of those preemptive extensions, but a lot of people think that was connected to a promise Mike Rizzo had made Boras a couple years ago as to why they had shut Strasburg down. Anyway, Boris will do something on behalf of his client, but if you're Chris Bryant, you've made a bunch of money doing the advertising. You're playing a game where your health should not be an issue between now and the time you come up in that free agency, and the riches are just so preposterous, as your buddy Bryce Harper is going to find out, that financially you'd be a little crazy not to wait. The only thing is for Bryant, and why it made probably for good conversation here or wherever, is that Bryant had a real bad last 3.5-4 months after head slide first into first base.
Yeah, but he's got 3 years left on his deal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also the Cubs window, right? That's the window. Through 2021 is this core window. We expect Theo to be here for it. It's going to be the guys you know, and then they're going to have to make some decisions on who they do pay and the next group and all of that. I would put it at 1%.
That he signs before he's a free agent?
But more so that they would trade him.
I'd put it higher than that.
I was going to say 1% that they trade him.
Oh, okay.
But you know what I mean? It's just they want Chris Bryant to be here for the core, and if they got to a realization like Chris Bryant isn't going to sign, then they would trade him with 1 year of control left and still get a pretty decent haul. They're not trading Chris Bryant with 2 or 3 years of club control left.
By a wide margin, the most likely scenario is that the Cubs end up exactly like the Nationals were this year.
Correct.
Trying to compete and living out Bryce Harper's final year and hoping for clarity in either direction, frankly, by July 31st. You know,
sure.
Because Jed has talked about that with us. He's talked about it before. Like, you know, if you do have a down year in the midst of your window, you got to capitalize on it. Look what the Yankees did, right?
Right. I mean, 2 years ago, Theo admitted to us when we were doing the show out in the bleachers, like about how close they were to selling, and like that. You know, he didn't name the names, but like the obvious one would have been Wade Davis,
mm-hmm.
right? A closer on a 1 year deal, and how that, like you got to capitalize.
Yeah,
on
last year in the bleachers, right?
Okay, yeah, but that's two seasons ago.
Just to clarify, so, yes.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
Yeah,
20. Yeah, because a bad first half or mediocre first half, and you got to decide what you are.
But when you're good and in your window, it's so rare to be able to make sell-off trades to help replenish the farm system right. That you've got to pounce if you can do it. Now, obviously, he was glad they didn't.
Uh-huh.
They make the run. They go to the NLCS, the whole thing.
But right.
It's just overwhelmingly likely that Chris Bryant will be a Cub for the next 3 years. And then if you want Chris Bryant to be a Cub for the next 6 or so years after that, you're going to have to be the highest bidder in free agency. That's how it works.
And it's of course, as Sahadev had pointed out, you talk to these guys every offseason and say, are you ready to talk about an extension and make some money right now and get some security? Anthony Rizzo signed that deal.
Correct.
Okay. Starlin Castro signed that deal. And then
Rick Hahn has done it with multiple guys on the south side. Evan Longoria did it famously.
Right.
It happens.
Right. Of course, it happens. So do they bring it up? Obviously they have, and they dream of that. What's interesting now is does Chris Bryant believe firmly that he's going to get back to his full self? Do the Cubs believe firmly that he's going to get back to his full self? It's likely that he can, but I'm a little scared. In terms of just Bryant, and I've said that already the past few weeks in different spots or whatever, like that's a real worry, is that shoulder, because of how he adjusted his swing and it didn't help at first, so he had to go back on the DL, and then how he adjusted his swing again when he came back and the power was sapped, yada yada, but he's got a whole offseason to heal and get it right, so he probably will.
Yeah,
but I'm a little nervous.
Sure. Let's put it this way. Chris Bryant was as close to a sure thing in baseball as you could have coming into this last season, and now he's not that anymore, right? Like there are 10 players, 20 players that are more sure thing position players going into next year, but all it takes is 30 games from Chris Bryant. I mean, as Sahadev pointed out on that piece, his first 39 games of this past year looked like he was tracking for an MVP year.
I don't think folks remember that as easily as you should.
Right.
How great he was before that moment.
He was awesome.
It was the slash line. He was slugging .422 or slugging .595 with a .422 on base. So he's over 1,000 on the OPS, and that's through 38 games. The strikeout rate was down.
The walk rate was up.
He was on pace for 60 doubles, 35 homers, 120 runs, and 99 RBIs. I had forgotten just how alarmingly good the pace was.
I had also, and so I feel better about the fact that they know exactly what happened, like when it happened, the slide into first base.
Yeah.
I have no questions about the guy's work ethic. And I have no question about if they felt like they needed to do surgery to clean it up, they would they would do it. They got plenty of time.
A texter brings up this that the league has adjusted to KB, and KB has not adjusted back. The Cubs' offense was indeed broken, and we have talked about the high fastball and how that has, you know, screwed with some of the launch angle guys, and KB is certainly that. But I do not believe for a second that Chris Bryant has been figured out.
No.
I do not believe that.
No, he's one of the best hitters in the sport. He's one of the best players in the sport. That doesn't mean he can't slump, but he was hurt. When he wasn't hurt, he was awesome. He has a long track record. So when you say you're a little worried about Chris Bryant...
I'm worried because mechanically you can get screwed up when you're injured and then you change something to deal with the injury and then you can get in chaos like that. You think about it more with pitchers, but this is, you know, it can happen to a hitter too.
I guess I would just, for me, I'm a little worried about it. Like, I'm more worried about Chris Bryant than I've been since he's been a big leaguer, but I still have more confidence in him going into next year than just about anybody on the Cubs because I still think he's their best player.
Yeah, it's long pause from me.
I know. Well, I was going to see how long you wanted to make it.
Well,
I still think he's their best player.
He better be their best player. Otherwise, this thing's... Like, if you're expecting Javier Baez to do that each and every year...
See, I love Rizzo as a player. You know I love what Rizzo brings defensively to a position that's not quite as important, except he's the full-on captain of that infield. And, like, his bunt defense and the way that he transforms their infield in those situations is pretty remarkable.
No doubt.
Let alone the consistent, incredibly high level of at-bats. Like, and I know KB is younger with more power and can play more positions, but if I got to pick one, I'd still, that's not an easy done deal for me.
Wow. I think third baseman and corner outfielder over first baseman. And
how good is that first baseman though?
Yeah, but how good is the ceiling of Chris Bryant? You saw it.
We've seen it.
MVP.
We've seen it.
I put it together years in a row. It's Cooperstown bound.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't see that. And Rizzo's first base defense, it's, you can't deny it. It's fantastic.
I brought it up to mitigate the lack of importance of the position that gets thrown at me.
Well, because it changes the way the whole thing's played. I mean, Contreras gets all the credit for how they backpick and keep guys on first when Lester's throwing. Rizzo deserves a ton of that, too.
Exactly. His role on helping to make your ace as effective as he has been these past 4 years.
Yeah, no question. It's not a knock on Rizzo. These are high-class problems. It's like debating, you know, Brady v. Peyton Manning. They're both awesome. They're both world-class players. But I do think that Bryant's ceiling is higher, and I would take the positional versatility over him. But we're nitpicking a little bit here, but I guess the point is he is awesome, and I expect him to still be awesome.
And he better be.
And they need him to be. So trading him now would be lunacy. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the Cubs aren't going to... But that's what the conversation around Chris Bryant was.
Was it really about trading?
Well, yeah,
Did it go that direction?
If he's not going to sign a contract extension, right?
Now I'm ashamed we've even talked about it from that perspective.
Well, that's the thing. It's just like, he's going to be here. He's not going to sign early. They're not going to trade him. You're going to have an MVP caliber player for the next 3 years. And then if you want to pay him, you're going to have to be the top bidder. That's how it's going to play out.
How good is this Final Four in MLB? How much fun should this be? Is this going to be? The answer is very fun. You've got these four teams, the two defending league champions against the two teams that ended up with the best record in their respective leagues.
Yep.
And just Astros Red Sox alone. Saw this from your guy, Jason Stark. This is only the third time that two teams who have won 103 games or more have ever met in the postseason. The 1912 World Series, which Bruce Levine remembers well, Red Sox and Giants, and the 1942 World Series that my dad remembers well, Cardinals and Yankees. So third time ever you've got two juggernauts like this.
Shep had the preseason wager, as you know, about Speedo and the sign promoting the show from here down Michigan Avenue over the river.
I saw the updated bracket.
Yeah, you see the updated bracket. If you had to bet now, which side do you like? He's got the Astros and the Dodgers. The field has the Red Sox and the Brewers.
I don't know how you bet against the Astros. As incredible as the Red Sox are, that bullpen is just woof before you get to Kimbrel. And David Price should be in that bullpen, but he's not going to. Looks like Alex Cora is going to start him again in game two. The Astros do not have a weakness that I'm aware of.
I asked Parkins the other day.
I still like our side.
And, well, I mean, hey, that's what's great about playoff baseball is
50-50.
You just, pretty much at this point, that's what it is. But I asked him the other day, Speaks, and this obviously goes for you too as a baseball fan. Are the Astros what you thought the Cubs were going to be when the plan was put down and laid out and kind of drawn out? Are they executing it the way that you thought the Cubs would be? Like, they're flawless. There's nothing wrong with this team. Their at-bats are all 7 pitches long. Their starters are all dominant. Their bullpen's freaking ridiculous.
When it's time when it's time to trade for a pitcher, they get Garrett Cole.
Or Justin Verlander.
When it's time to you know, their deal with the devil is Roberto Osuna this year, right? Their kids have consistently gotten better. Look how Bregman has gotten better in the ways that Kyle Schwarber perhaps has not. Right?
Correa,
Altuve, Springer.
Bregman's a stud,
Bregman, that's what I mean. But like all of their kids, I mean, Correa has not, you know, gone the way of Addison Russell offensively these last couple years. Right. Everybody's still ascending. Yes, I would rather be the Astros than the Cubs.
Like, is that what you thought? Like, if you had to, was that the thought it was going to be Cubs-wise? And that's, I mean, they've still won 95 games year in and year out, so it's not like they're struggling.
Well,
there's obvious flaws there.
Well, it comes down to executing the trades and purchases of starting pitchers that the Astros appear to have done better than the Cubs, other than Lester, right? I mean, they got Verlander, and look at Verlander, and they got Garrett Cole. And the way that they scouted and bought Garrett Cole when the Pirates were selling low on him, actually, is pretty remarkable.
I think that the answer to that is yes, because when the Cubs dominated 2016, we thought, okay, they dominated 2016, they won the World Series, and they have all of the resources possible to keep it going. But it's really hard to have a perfect baseball team. So, I would take the Astros over the Cubs also, but there aren't many other teams that you would take over the Cubs going forward.
Right, like when it was all kind of like laid out, and remember the Sports Illustrated piece Ben Ryder did of the Astros are going to win the 2017 World Series, this, that, and the other
and
thing.
Then they did, yeah.
And
then they
well did. Done.
It was perfectly done on that. But like the outcry was like, oh, the Astros, are they set up better for the future than the Cubs are? And it's yes. And if you judge the Cubs window based on when Bryant's contract expires at the end of 2021, it's like, I take the Astros, and it's really not particularly close right
for
now
next,
for those years.
They were also worse longer. They're
down. 100 loss wins, 4 years in a row?
100 loss team, 4 years in a row. They're down. They were willingly down longer than the Cubs were. It's a dramatically quick turnaround here in year 7 of the Cubs regime.
And had the missed picks, right? I mean, could have had Bryant and the things like that at the top of the draft. But in terms,
which is crazy. Yeah, they blew it with Brady Aiken and blew it with Appel.
Right. Through their arbitration years, I'm with you, but I'm not saying, like, the Cubs will miss the playoffs, sure, but it's going to be really hard given the resources that the Cubs have that the Astros don't. Like, the Cubs will be able to be free agency players to do the big market stuff in addition to having the healthy organization to bring
up
the stars.
And they already have. They paid for Darvish.
Right, and that's not something that the Astros are going to be doing as consistently as the Cubs can.
No, they had to use their prospect capital to get Cole and Verlander. And they had that more because they were bad for longer. They're a year behind in terms of having arrived. You could argue 2 years behind.
So I just don't expect the Cubs to have another 3-4 year window where they're losing and tanking for prospects. Like, I don't think that's coming in the foreseeable future.
But you think the Astros will have to pivot and do that again at some point?
Correct.
They have still developed talent, though.
Yeah, no, that's
like,
the thing. They're loaded.
They turn out guys that the Cubs have gotten Bodie. And, like, the Bodie story was awesome for 3-4 weeks this summer. And it was like, wow, there's a 25-year-old guy, and he's hitting walk-off grand slams.
Who's the guy who came up for the Astros this year? Tyler White?
Yes.
I mean, they've had two or three who just kind of, that guy's
like
as good as anybody.
Going with it. And it's like they get production out of that.
They're going to pivot to a better run, hopefully, for them, Tampa Bay, where you stay young and stay as cheap as you can, but keep churning over your prospects and keep using them. That's not something that the Cubs can do.
No, but that margin for error on misses in that model is a lot narrower than the Cubs model, because the Cubs can throw money at their problem and be like, oh, wow, we We messed up on Darvish. We'll trade for Cole Hamels, and then we'll pay him his $20 million option.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't that many teams in baseball that can do that.
That's for sure.
There are some.
And the Astros will not be one of those teams.
Exactly. So there's just more ways to mask the blemishes that inevitably arise through the cruel game of baseball, the Cubs way, than the Astros way.
I just, while we're there, I always like to remember how bad it got for the Astros when they were in, I believe, year three of intentional losing. They had a game that drew a 0.0 rating on television. Their pregame show that day drew a 0.1. The pregame show outdrew the game as the Astros were tanking away in Houston.
So Great takes.
White Sox fans, hang tight. Hang tight. Be strong.
This segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you could save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter the promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Will Perdue at 240. We're back well before that with a little bit of a history lesson. You'll hear from some big names coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Well, I wrote the book on the triangle. I used it in 1947, and we used it all my years of coaching at K-State. And I wrote the book in 60-61. What I did out of the triangle, I developed the concept because they're dropping off the wing and giving you an opportunity to start your penetration, and then they close in from the weak side, fanning the top of the circle guard away, like you're seeing today all the time, fanning them away, and then when they help, actually, they're vulnerable to the pitch and the shot. We had to develop that particular series of options in order to combat the way Hank Iba played his defense. And that's kind of how a lot of things in the triangle offense evolved, is reacting to defenses.
That is the voice of Tex Winter, the Basketball Hall of Famer, 9-time champion and architect of the famed triangle offense. Bottom of the hour on The Score, brought to you by Northwestern Football. Coach Fitz and the Cats host Nebraska Saturday at 11 a.m. Limited tickets remain. Buy now at nusports.com. Will Perdue will join us in 10 minutes or so to talk Tex Winter.
Tex Winter predated Phil Jackson on the Bulls coaching staff, but the presence of him doing the offense and preaching about the triangle and the respect that he engendered, and the presence of Johnny Bock teaching the defense and the respect that he engendered, those guys legitimized young, weird-ass, spiritual Phil Jackson for those players in quite a big way. You're Jordan, you're Pippen, you're listening even more to Phil when he's got Tex and Johnny on his side as well.
Yeah, as someone who grew up revering the 90s Bulls, you would hear about Tex Winter and you'd hear how Michael Jordan would talk about him or how Scottie Pippen would talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
And you just knew he commanded like an immense amount of respect. And the stories, you know, it's pretty legendary. You know, Jerry Krause begging him to come to the Bulls and give him a year or two with the organization. He stays a decade and a half, and Krause was so loyal to him mm-hmm. that he boycotted the Hall of Fame. He stopped going to the Hall of Fame until Tex Winter got in, and so that's what brought Jerry Krause back to the Basketball Hall of Fame in 2011
mm-hmm.
when Tex finally got in. So I mean, the guy is spoke of in mythical ways over there.
Yeah, and Phil was a weirdo. Like it's easy for some folks to forget or maybe don't remember. Like Phil was an outsider, CBA coach. You're like, why Phil Jackson for this bunch? Really?
Yeah.
And yet Tex and Johnny were a huge part of that. And Tex, really, the mythology of the triangle offense and the triple post offense, it was on these airwaves, I believe, when Jeff Van Gundy called Phil Big Chief Triangle, was the nickname for Phil.
That's great.
Because right, 'cause Phil is preaching, you know, spirituality and peyote and the triangle offense.
Great things to preach.
Oh, yeah, man. And just the triangle itself is so ingenious on so many levels, in a general basketball sense, and also just for how it fit specific stars, specific teams with stars like Jordan, Pippen, and later like Kobe, Shaq.
Yeah, and obviously now outdated, but it was the type of thing that at that time actually led to more player movement, which is now all about what the NBA is and the corners and all that. You recoiled a little bit at outdated.
I sure do, because what the triangle is at its core is a way to get everybody involved and a way to set up your best players with moments to take advantage of a defense as it's scattering and running all over the place.
Yeah.
And it's not isolation ball. Right? It's not isolation ball, but it can be sometimes. So there's room for that within it. But it does feed the stars. That's the thing. It did feed the stars, and it fed Kobe and Shaq. And yeah, you know, you could have won with those guys with a lot of different systems, but the triangle was pretty damn magical in terms of making all those players feel like they were involved, because they were. Everybody had a role. Everybody's moving.
Yeah.
And look at what the best teams today are doing. Everybody should have a role. Everybody's moving. You try to get the defense on their heels and in chaos, so then your best players penetrate and take care of it. Just because it failed when Jim Clemens tried to do it with inferior talent, or just because it looked bad when it didn't have the stars, doesn't mean it's necessarily outdated.
It's just the league now is so three-point base and so not post-up based that it's hard. Like, you don't see that anymore. Like, you know what I mean? It's not really how it's three or four guys outside of the 3-point line and maybe one inside. You know what I mean?
It's moved out. Where guys post now is like the free throw line extended, as opposed to Bill Cartwright going and posting up 15 feet away.
Let's hear from Steve Kerr, who reflected on Tex Winter upon his passing at 96 years old.
One of the most important people in my basketball career. What he did for me, and the path that he put me on, the chance that he gave me in Chicago along with Phil Jackson, changed my whole life. And I learned so much about basketball from Tex. The guy, Ron Adams, told me that Tex knew more about the history of the game and the fundamentals of the game than anybody he had ever met in his life. And I was lucky enough to play for Tex for 5 years and learn from him. A lot of what I do here with the Warriors is patterned after the things I learned from Tex. And what a life he lived. He was a unique individual and had touched thousands of lives. And today the news was tough. Tex was a special person to me and everybody who played for him. Just want to pass along our thoughts to Texas family. Thanks.
What lessons, memories stick with you? Tex,
he didn't care about anything other than execution. He didn't care about stars. He didn't care about status. He didn't care about anything other than just executing the play. And he's the only guy who would ever utter the words, "Phil, get Michael out of there, put Kerr in." He literally said that many times. He'd say, "We're not running the offense, Michael," or "Phil, get Michael out of there, put Kerr in for him." I'd look at my teammates, I'd be like, "Don't look at me, he said it." But that's how Tex was. He was a stickler for offensive execution. And like I said, he taught me an awful lot about basketball, and I learned a lot about his life, too. He would take food from every one of our pregame meals, and he would take it back with him. There was, you know, tons of food at these pregame meals was wasted, right, because we'd be overloaded with food. And he'd take food back to his room and take it back home. And, you know, he grew up in the Dust Bowl. You know, grew up in northern Texas, and his family had to leave and move to California because there was no food. So he lived through that, you know, as a child, which shaped his entire life, his entire existence. And he got to L.A. and moved to California, ended up going to USC and coaching his whole life, and a pretty remarkable human being. Nobody really wants to talk about the game after all that.
Yeah, I guess there's no way to transition.
Well, Tex would have hated this game.
Yeah, he would.
No flow at all.
Kerr's the best, man.
He's the best.
Brent Musburger at 3:00, but we are going to get some 90s Bulls stories and some Tex Winter stories from Will Perdue next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tex was so instrumental in the Bulls' success in those championship runs with the triangle offense. Does not get enough credit for being, you know, the guy who orchestrated that offense. I mean, just a great human being and one of my favorite coaches I've ever played for.
He was a wonderful college coach and then a head coach briefly
And the funny thing about that is,
and then, yeah, I'm sorry.
They said his offense would never work at the pro level. Never work at the pro level. And it's funny, you look at the game now, how it's evolved. Not only did the Bulls win six championships, but every team in the NBA currently is running some kind of part of that offense.
Neil Funk, Stacey King on NBC Sports Chicago discussing Tech's winner passing away at 96 years old. We'll talk to Brent Musburger in 15 minutes. Spiegs is in for Mac. Bobby Portis actually going to be on the show in 45 minutes, so lots of basketball going on. Will Perdue, a member of those 90s Bulls teams and, of course, an analyst at NBC Sports Chicago, kind enough to give us some time today to tell some Tech's winner stories. Will, thank you very much for the time. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. Is fall officially here now?
Man, we skipped right to winter.
Yeah, you got 10 minutes. You got 10 minutes to enjoy fall today, and then it's back to winter tonight and tomorrow morning, Will.
So how about that?
Not great. Not great.
Will, what did Tech's winter being on that bench do for you guys when you were dealing with Phil Jackson? It was kind of weird and a little odd and young. And, you know, Tech's had the bona fides, didn't he? Right away, you had to listen to what Tech's had to say.
Yeah, you know, what people don't realize is Phil did a great job of delegating. And he left the offense totally up to Tech's winner. I mean, that's the thing. People sometimes forget this wasn't Phil Jackson. This was Tech's winner. Tech's winner was the one who invented the triangle offense, triple post, however you want to look at it. So we would go through practice, and the first, well, Phil only wanted it to be like the first 15 to 20 minutes, but it usually went 45 minutes to an hour because Tex was very specific. He, no funny business. And he was kind of like an ornery older guy because if we didn't run the offense correctly, he would get mad at practice. There was no shortcuts. And I think people sometimes forget that, you know, that's why what made it so good was the fact that he would get really mad. And when Tex would get mad, everybody would kind of laugh because, you know, when old people get mad, it's kind of funny. But, you know, we constantly went over that offense every day in practice because it wasn't necessarily difficult, but there were so many freaking options that it made it to the point where it was almost impossible to run. But when we did run it well, it was unstoppable.
So what did that look like? Like, what did Tech's winner getting angry at the 90s Bulls and Michael Jordan look like?
Well, that's the first thing. He didn't hesitate. It didn't matter who it was. And if it was Michael screwing around and taking a shortcut, he'd call Michael out. And, you know, the typical roll the eyes. All right, old man. You know, do it. But Tex was kind of like the what movie was it? Tex kind of reminds me of Mr. Miyagi. Why am I waxing this car again? You know, that's kind of what it was. We went through all these little drills and, you know, when you can't see the big picture, which some of us were pretty narrow-minded, pretty stubborn, but when you couldn't see the bigger picture, you're like, why are we doing this? And then all of a sudden, bingo, you catch the fly with the chopsticks, you wax on, you wax off. Next thing you know, we go on a 12-0 run, and the defense's head is spinning, and they have no answers.
That's an awesome image.
It really is. And then would he kind of – did he have the I told you so in him, or, like, how did he handle that?
Well, he never did the I told you so. And Tex hardly ever smiled, but it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of like the preacher that gives the sermon, right? And if you really listen, he knows you're listening because of how you react. And when he stands at the back of the church as everybody's leaving, and he might say one thing to see what kind of reaction he gets out of you to see if you really were paying attention. But you knew, Tex knew when we were paying attention, when the offense ran smoothly, because like I say, even when we beat teams by 30, Tex would, the next day in practice, would be like, all right, now, last night, we'd be like, Tex, we won by 30. Yeah, but we really didn't run the offense that well. It can be better. It can be better. And then Phil would kind of be in the corner just with that little, grin on his face and then be like, all right, well, let's go through it. And then for the next 45 minutes, there we are going through the offense. And the only voice you heard was Tech's winner.
That's awesome. Will Perdue is on with us here on 670 The Score. We're talking about Tech. Did that offense make the entire team feel more involved than running another offense with more isolation from Michael or even Scotty would have? Because, like, you guys had to constantly be paying attention. Even the two of you who are not involved in these triangle on the other side, when the ball moves, the triangle moves. So everybody's got to be paying attention and cutting and ready to be involved.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. And that's when I say what's made it so difficult on one hand, but yet so effective on the other, because it was a read offense. And if you weren't paying attention, as you just pointed out, you're just, you know, you can't be over in the corner twiddling your thumbs. It only takes one guy to screw the whole thing up. But all five guys have to move in unison, depending on where the pass is made and depending on what the defense is doing. And all five guys have to make the proper read. Now, let's also be honest here. As good as this offense was, there were times when it sputtered. But when it sputtered, we also had the best player in basketball, Michael Jordan. And then when Phil went to L.A., they had Kobe. Because like with any offense, when you struggle, what's the bailout? Screen roll. So then all of a sudden, you know, you'd see the image where Michael would put the ball between his legs, or in this case, Kobe would put the ball between his legs with 7 or 6 seconds on the shot clock. And then the big, you know, whether it was me or Bill Winnington or Stacy or Luke or Shaq or whoever, when you set that screen, when you got that guy coming off that screen roll, it makes the offense look good as well. But at the end of the day, when it ran well, there is not a defense in the world that can stop it.
You know, Will, I was thinking about it this morning. The triangle added to the swagger of Bulls fans for that entire decade, because it was like, oh, yeah, we're running this triangle, too. Like, this thing is mysterious. Guys like Tex Winter have spent their whole lives, you know, learning this and teaching this. Like, it added to our arrogance as a fandom. Did it add to your confidence as a team, as a player?
Well, we knew when it was running well that it couldn't be stopped. So when you stepped on the floor, you knew. And it was almost like a challenge. You're like, oh, I wonder what our opponent's going to do today. Because if they've watched any of the film over the last five games, they've obviously seen that whatever the Nets were doing, or whatever the Bullets were doing, or whatever the Hawks were doing, you know, you go down the list, the Bucks, it wasn't effective against the offense. So what is this team going to do, you know, to try to change things up? So it was kind of challenging. But again, at the end of the day, because it was a read offense, for anything that the defense could throw at you, this offense had an answer, but not an answer where you made a specific call, but a read. But then again, that's what made it so difficult. You got to remember, when we first started running this offense, when Phil took over, I mean, it was a disaster. It was a fire drill. I mean, we struggled for a long time, and a lot of people just said, well, as you heard that clip from Stacey King, it just won't work in the NBA. But Phil was determined to run it. Tex constantly pounded away at us to run it and to be disciplined and stick to it. And we saw how effective it really was.
Texter writes in, hey, Will, who screwed it up the most? Like, who did Tex Winter have to just get after and after and after because they couldn't figure out the offense?
Well, I mean, he would get on Michael a lot because Michael would break the offense because he could beat his guy off the dribble at any time. But Tex kept hammering away at him about, you know, long-term, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter. I know you can take it and dribble anytime, but, you know, we're also putting thoughts into the back of the defense that later on, if we run the same play, they're like, oh, I know what's going to happen. And they would overplay and we'd get the back door cut for a dunk for MJ or Scotty. So he'd get mad at him. Horace had a tendency to kind of screw it up a little bit at times because, like I said, if you're on the backside, you have a tendency to kind of lose interest because you're like, well, this isn't for me. But at the same time, you got to keep your offense, you got to keep your guy occupied, and that's what the movement did.
I mean, it makes sense. If you were going to tell our audience one story to make sure that they knew what kind of guy and coach Tex Winter is, what story are you going to?
Well, one of the things I always talk about, Tex used to talk to all the bigs, and he used to say it to everybody, don't be a jerk. And, of course, you guys hear that, and you're like, man, you guys had a bunch of a-holes on your team? Everybody's a jerk? They're like, no. He had this terminology about being smooth, being silent. It's kind of like the Mr. Miyagi thing. When Biggs got the ball on the post, when Michael got the ball on the post, when Scotty, because anybody could run into the post, he talked about chin it, meaning take the ball, put it underneath your chin, elbows out, the defense can't get to it. You know, kind of like when you're growing up, you hear triple threat, right?
Yeah.
But what he hated was is when the bigs were in the post or whoever was in the post and they had the ball over by their right ear and then their left ear and then over their head and in between their legs and to the side. And he goes, stop being a jerk. And you're like, what is he talking about? He would grab the ball, slap it out of your hand, and he'd go stand in the post. And he literally looked like he was in the middle of the disco floor doing the jerk to, like, Disco Duck. I mean, he was all over the place. Everybody on the team is rolling. I mean, literally on the floor rolling because it was so funny. And occasionally he would start doing that, and all of a sudden, oh, my back. Oh, God. You know, something like that. And then he would just slam the ball down and be like, stop being a jerk. All right, run the offense.
Will, thank you.
Oh, looking forward to hopefully getting together again this year because I think the Bulls will be very interesting, unlike in previous years.
We certainly hope so.
Seems interesting. You like Jabari off the bench before we say goodbye real quick?
Well, if that's where he's best, that's where he needs to come from. Because what these guys got to realize is, in Jabari, he's very fortunate because this is a tryout not only for him,
mm-hmm.
but for 29 other teams. Oh, and by the way, Jabari, you're getting paid $20 million for this tryout. If they want you to come off the bench, come off the bench.
Good stuff, Will. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
All right, that's Will Perdue with us.
I love that image of Tech sitting there in the middle just, like, jerking the ball all around his body. And like, what are you doing? I'm doing this. I'm like, oh, ouch. Oh, God. Sorry. Well, don't be a jerk.
Anyway. He's been old for forever. I mean, see.
Seriously.
Right? I mean, come on. Brent Musburger actually canceled. We got Bobby Portis in 30 minutes. We can follow up on some of that Bulls stuff, though. Present-day Bulls coming up on The Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.